This is a Christian Science lecture entitled The Revelation of True Safety. It was first given on December 4, 1951 at the Convention Hall in Tulsa, Oklahoma. The lecture was delivered by Frank Ayres, a member of the Board of Lectureship of the Mother Church. The text was as follows. The world today is crying out for safety. It has been proved that safety cannot be found in matter or in the physical strength of men. Where then can it be found? Jesus Christ gave us an answer when he said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." And that is from John 14, line 27. He was not troubled. He was not afraid. For he found peace and true safety in a clear understanding of God. Not as the world giveth, but as God giveth, gave he peace unto men. Mankind will not find true safety until it has gained a practical understanding of God. That is why Christian Science is of vital interest today, because not as the world giveth, but as God giveth, Christian Science makes plain our Master's understanding of God. Heading: Safety in Great Commandments. Christ Jesus also said that to obey the two great commandments, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy strength and with all thy mind, and thy neighbour as thyself, Luke 10:27, would enable man to live, to inherit eternal life. Here then is an answer to man's individual safety. Might not these commandments contain an answer to world safety? Will the threat of penalty stay forever an evil hand? What except the power of God's love reflected to our fellow man will finally destroy mistakenly guided motives which endanger the peace of the world today? Where except in a correct understanding and faithful living of true neighborliness can we find an answer? When mankind learns how to love God supremely and his neighbor as himself, as Jesus did, and sincerely practices such love, we will have eternal peace. Take courage, dear friend. Christian Science shows that it is divinely natural to love supremely the God that Jesus knew, and to love correctly the neighbor that Jesus saw. For Christian Science reveals that God has never failed to maintain the real you and the real me in perfect spiritual harmony and absolute security. That God knows nothing about mankind's dream of matter and evil, and that right where mankind has been fooled into believing that life is material, limited, and perishable, life has always been spiritual, unlimited, and eternal. That God has always filled the earth with the knowledge of these facts of being, and that this knowledge is part of the Christ or truth that Jesus knew so clearly. It has always been possible for mankind to perceive this truth. The Bible actually records mankind's struggle to find it. The commandments unfolded to Moses because of his glimpse of truth. A revelation came to Paul, and other glimpses are set forth in the Bible, and the New Testament tells how Jesus foresaw and prophesied a final and complete revelation in a promised Comforter. Heading: Christian Science, the Promised Comforter. Christian Science reveals this Comforter. This great final revelation came to a gentle New England woman, Mary Baker Eddy, who had grown spiritually close to God and clearly recognized the same Christ or truth which Jesus demonstrated. As this truth poured into her spiritually ready consciousness, she stepped out of deep material darkness into a new country, a new world, into God's true country, God's true world. Mrs. Eddy looked deeply into the infinity of reality, and just as light uncovers and destroys darkness, so this light of Christ's truth that flooded her consciousness and which she accepted with childlike humility uncovered the unreality of the false material sense of life and creation that previously seemed so real and formidable to her. In her textbook, which contains the full revelation of Christian Science and is entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she makes these bold statements on page 468. There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and is infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. God is spirit, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. These were indeed startling statements when first uttered, perhaps startling to you now, but not so startling today to the world in general, since many material scientists have now found that material objects are actually only mental perceptions. Since matter is not real, and God is infinite mind, spirit all in all, and since man is his image and likeness, not material but spiritual, then the kingdom of heaven is possible of demonstration right now. Keep in mind that just as basic as the revelation of God as infinite spirit is the discovery that matter, all of the testimony of the material senses, is actually unreal. Basic also is the discovery made by Christian Science that since God is revealed as infinite and omnipotent love, filling all space, then evil is actually powerless, unreal, occupying no place. Professor John Marshall, formerly of Albion College, Michigan, is now of the University of South Sewanee, Tennessee, and he said in substance, physical existence is all relative, while beyond it lies the eternal, perfect, harmonious expression of life, where goodness and beauty are inseparable. Evil is not to be found there because it lacks absolute permanent reality, since it tends to its own destruction. And that was taken from a paper read in Chicago, Illinois, on September the 9th, 1933, and reported in the Christian Science Monitor of that same year. Heading: Heaven Here Now. Mankind does not have to go anywhere to find heaven, for Christian Science reveals that heaven has always been here. He just has to awaken from his mesmeric dream. The real man is living in heaven now, and always has been there. Man is free, harmonious, and perfect now. There is no other man. If you look at a beautiful white rose through blue glasses, you see a blue rose, though there has never been anything but a perfect white one. We don't have to do anything to the blue rose to find the white one, except to remove the blue glasses. So to find perfect man, we don't do anything to a so-called mortal man. We just remove the false lenses of material sense and spiritually perceive perfect spiritual man. Man is not mortal now, and has never lived in the bondage and tyranny of a material sense of life. Putting off the old, full sense of man, and putting on the Christ understanding of man, is purely a spiritually mental process. This change takes place in human consciousness, for Christian science reveals that the material body is just the objectification of mortal thought. So, as human consciousness is cleansed little by little of its mesmerizing false belief, it is putting on more and more of the mind of Christ, and the human expression or body keeps improving in the process. It becomes less and less mortal and more harmonious as human consciousness accepts Christ's truth and discards false belief. God could never get into mortal man's dream of a life apart from God because it was never true. God is truth itself, conscious only of true being. But God, as divine principle, has always maintained for mankind the correct answers for its self-deceived sense, just as the principle of mathematics does not get into the mistakes of the mathematician, does not know anything about them, but does always contain the correct answer to the mistakes and stands ready to correct them. Heading, Mrs. Eddy, Worthy of Revelation. How do we know that Mrs. Eddy was worthy of this revelation, this promised comforter? We know this by her works and by her life. Just as Jesus referred to his works of healing to prove that he was the promised Messiah, so Mrs. Eddy can refer to her works of healing to prove that she was the revelator of the promised comforter. She healed many cases of desperate illness, including consumptions, where the lungs were mostly consumed, malignant diphtheria, carious bones, cancer, also insanity, blindness, deafness, lameness, the crippled, and those that had never walked. And usually, these healings occurred in from 1 to 3 interviews. She accepted the Christ truth that unfolded to her without question. It became an unshakable conviction, which enabled her to heal readily. What kind of life did Mrs. Eddy live? She was born of substantial New England stock, of parents religious and highly respected. She was as well educated as any young girl of her day, was a brilliant scholar, and made a substantial living as a writer for newspapers and other publications. She was always spiritually minded and lived a helpful and irreproachable life. With the coming of the revelation came her own much-needed physical healing. Thereafter, she expressed radiant health and was constantly about her father's business. Those who lived with her and knew her best tell how she listened intently day and night for God's voice to direct her in her life purpose, to impress humanity with the genuine recognition of practical, operative Christian science. That's a quote from Miss Lane's writings, page 207. No follower of Christ Jesus walked more closely in Jesus' footsteps. No follower loved mankind, including his enemies, more than she. She knew God as father, mother, love, and exemplified that love constantly. To the end of her human life, she labored for mankind, and one of her greatest gifts came in her last years when she established the daily international newspaper, the Christian Science Monitor. Heading, Reasoning from Revealed Truth. All through the Christian Science textbook, we find statements of the absolute truth concerning God, man, and universe appearing side by side with the scientific explanation of the unreality of the false counterfeit sense of these statements. God could reveal only truth, but this truth uncovers the falsity of mankind's mesmeric dream. Both are needed for mankind's salvation, so we find both appearing side by side in this practical textbook. Let us take two examples of this revealed truth, one concerning God, the other concerning man. Let us assume that they are true. Then let us reason from that basis and see how the Christ truth can unfold in our consciousness and begin to dissolve our mesmeric, mistaken sense of God and man. Mrs. Eddy defines God as the great I Am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving and eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. That's on page 587 of Science and Health. God, as the great I Am, fills infinitude, is never absent, and excludes any being apart from himself. The all-knowing God knows without process all that there is to be known. As the all-seeing, God perceives and is conscious of all. As the all-acting God, he alone is the source of all beneficent action. The all-loving God is ever love, the only true love, which loves all. Since God is eternal, he knows, sees, acts, is wise, and loves eternally. Our leader defines man as the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. Then man's individual being is divinely authorized, is as final and assured as God himself. As a complete representation of mind, man individually reflects and expresses in quality all that God is as mind. Therefore, man eternally knows, sees, acts, and expresses wisdom without limit as God does, and only as God does. God, being spirit and principle, man's being and action are spiritual and are governed harmoniously by divine law. Since God is soul, man expresses the radiancy of soul and is divinely beautiful and ever satisfied. Since God and God alone is life and intelligence, man is not subject to any material process of life. He has never been born into matter, is not and never was dependent upon heart, blood, bones, muscles, or brain for life, activity, or intelligence. Since God is truth, man is always truthful, upright, and sinless. Since God is love, man is divinely considerate and never indifferent, selfish, or hateful. Since God is substance, man reflects as the divine substance or God, and can never be weakened, can never be injured or destroyed. These scientific facts hint the many correct conclusions that can be drawn from the foregoing brief statement of this revealed Christ truth of God and man. They indicate how you can begin to think about your true selfhood. They give you a glimpse of the spiritual meaning of the two great commandments, to love God supremely and thy neighbor as thyself. Can't you love that kind of God or that kind of man? Can't you see how the Bible begins to unfold to you? Take Jesus' words, for example, I and my Father are one, from John 10. Before Abraham was, I am, John 8. Can you see that Jesus spoke of his true spiritual selfhood, forever at one with God? Subheading: Jesus human, Christ divine. The man Jesus was human, but what he knew and practiced of the Christ truth was divine. Mrs. Eddy says in her work No on Yes on page 36, the human Jesus had a resort to his higher self and relation to the Father, and there could find rest from the unreal trials in the conscious reality and royalty of his being, holding the mortal as unreal and the divine as real. It was this retreat from material to spiritual selfhood which recuperated him for triumph over sin, sickness, and death. Jesus' resort to his spiritual selfhood enabled him to think divinely and gave him power to subdue his own material sense of selfhood and finally discard it for the divine. Christian Science and its followers revere Jesus for what he did for mankind. They recognize him as the promised perfect presenter, illustrator, and demonstrator of the Christ truth, which has been and always will be mankind's saviour. No one could ever take the place of Jesus. Mrs. Eddy said, Earth has not known another so great and good as Jesus Christ. That's from First Church of Christ Scientists and Miscellany, page 221. He was mankind's perfect exemplar. The Christ selfhood to which he resorted is the true Christ selfhood of everyone, and Christian Science reveals how we can resort to the same Christ selfhood. The real man, our spiritual identity, is the expression of the one source, namely God. Our true being is as celestial as his, as divinely controlled and directed. Heading: A Spiritual Shower. Since man is celestial, the perfect reflection and expression of God in all his beauty and loneliness, how should we start our day? By being grateful that the foregoing fact is true. We could even take the time for a spiritual shower of truth to wash away the aggressive material sights and sounds that argue that this is not true. We could start with gratitude for our revealed knowledge of God, that he is infinite mind, spirit, life, truth, and love, and contemplate deeply the significance of any or all of these synonyms of God. Rejoice that as infinite mind, he is our mind, our intelligence, our guidance, our direction, our inspiration, our protection. And since he is infinite, there is no other mind, no mortal mind, no aggressive suggestion, no hatred, no envy, no criticism, no fault-finding. Remembering that God is infinite love and that man is the reflection of love, we can be grateful that love fills all space and that all creation is expressing love and is compassionately interested in the welfare of every living creature. This understanding would start us loving our brother and expecting love from him. Start a day of proving love is reflected in love, as per page 17 of Science and Health. If we have any held-over memories of hurts or injustices, we can turn our shower upon them. Deny that they ever had presence or substance. As we set ourselves to accept the spiritually mental shower, we will find that the spiritual truths that we need will unfold to us, and as they unfold, they will open our eyes to the aggressive mental suggestions lurking around, trying to darken our day, and we can apply these truths in denial of the particular suggestions. Sometimes it helps to voice these truths out loud and let them assure us of the divine power of truth and the powerlessness of error. And occasionally it helps to have a loved one join us in this exercise. Then especially it is helpful to voice our truths and denials out loud and each one is blessed by the other's spiritual listening, affirmation, and denial. One can voice and the other can listen, and the listener can become the voicer as the first voicer is about ready to quit. And this process can be continued again and again until you have covered about everything with your spiritual shower, and like the sheep in our favourite shepherd hymn, are washed clean. By all means, let us start our day claiming our divine inheritance. Start the day as the sons of God, and do our best to act as the sons of God during the entire day. If we get a head start on aggressive evil suggestions, they will not catch up with us later. But this by no means sets forth a complete spiritual cleansing, but it indicates how you might proceed. It indicates how students of Christian Science might pray, for humbly and reverently yearning for and clinging to the Christ truth of God and man with deep love and grateful heart, expectantly applying the truth to dissolve false belief of self or neighbour, is actually prayer and treatment in Christian Science, in obedience to the two great commandments. Heading: Prayer Answered. Here is an illustration of answered prayer when a student of Christian Science held steadfastly to a simple statement of spiritual truth. A woman went to a Christian Science practitioner in great distress because of a lump on her body, which had developed to alarming proportions. Among other things, the practitioner explained to her that because God is all acting, then his action must be going on right where the destructive force claimed to be. And since God is love, his action must be loving, always operating according to God's beneficent law to bless and heal her. After the treatment, although not conscious of any improvement in the physical condition, she dismissed the practitioner and decided to rely entirely upon the simple truth, which she had accepted, that Christ was operating to bless right where the growth claimed to be. Within a few months, she called the practitioner to report in great joy that she had been completely healed. The growth had disappeared, leaving no sign of where it had been. Subheading: Aids to Progress. As we cherish the Christ truth and let it burn brightly in consciousness, it will uncover what might be termed hindrances to our progress. One hindrance is our reluctance to let go of the belief in a material inheritance. Personal sense argues that it would be disloyal to our family not to think that we have inherited their good traits. Yet human goodness does not compare with the spiritual goodness which is ours because of our eternal oneness with our Father, Mother, God. The belief of inherited evil tendencies, which may appear only as the searchlight of truth lights up the dark place of human consciousness, can be the secret hindrance to our happiness and success. A monstrous cheat is the inherited belief that we are incapable of carrying through to a good end. Haven't you known people who are capable of almost anything, and yet because of some unnatural reluctance fail to push forward to their best success? The saying, "I would if I could, but I can't," is not true about God's man. Man reflects will and ability. Man can do all things because all things are possible to God and to man as God's reflection. It is most encouraging to contemplate the nowness of man's spiritual perfection, that now he is complete in true form, mind, faculties, strength, health, courage, and dominion, that he lacks no good, expresses no deformity or shortcoming, needs no remaking. Yes, this is the man you are now. This man was never born and will never die. This is the man you can love as yourself and as your neighbor. This is the man you continue to love and be loyal to as dear ones pass from your sight. Their true being is perfect now. There is no here and over there in God's sight. Those seeming to be away have just as much good, just as much opportunity to claim and prove their divine heritage, as do we. You will not help them or yourselves by yearning for their human presence. You can safely leave them in the tender care of your father, mother, love. Our dear leader, Mrs. Eddy, said, "He who dwelleth in eternal light is bigger than the shadow, and will guard and guide his own." It's Miscellaneous Writings, page 134. Clinging to the human sense of anyone clogs your progress heavenward, and is always disloyal to man, whom you now know to be divine. In taking the position of perfect man, be assured that, humanly speaking, you will not grow faster spiritually than you are ready to grow, that you will not take on more of the divine nature of God than you can comfortably bear. The light of the Christ will only be as bright to you as you are prepared for, and will shine to destroy your errors only where you open the door. If you are desirous of obeying God's will, you will not assume a goodness you have not proved. You will be faithful to daily tasks and obligations. You will first demonstrate your religion at the place where truth finds you. God will bless you right where you are. Subheading: Present Good Not Discarded. You can rest assured that you will not need to discard anything good in your present makeup. As a student of Christian Science, you may use petitionary prayer, but you will no longer plead with God to give you health, supply, position, or a companion, because you will be claiming your completeness as his perfect spiritual reflection. You may pray for more spiritual understanding, more spiritual love, more purity. You will yearn to express more of God's nature, to be more obedient to divine principle, to let go of the so-called pleasant places in the material dream, and to live courageously the spiritual truths that you know. You will desire to exchange your human plan for yourself and others, and accept and fit obediently and graciously into God's wonderful design. Your prayers will be to know yourself and others as God knows you and them, and to behave as God plans, minute by minute, for your true behavior. You can still use your conscience, that little instrument that tells you what is right and what is wrong, where to go and where not to go. You will increase its usefulness as you exchange it for your true spiritual sense of listening and hearing, which you will now understand better as you accept the Christ truth, that you are one with God as his idea, and know because he knows. You will be grateful that God, infinite principle and love, has complete understanding in himself, in his ability to take care of his creation, and that he constantly loves to do so, and that man, God's image and likeness, reflects this faith, this ability, this constant love, and you are that man. You will be grateful that God, infinite soul, is satisfied with the perfection, the beauty, charm, grace, loveliness, variety, eternal freshness, newness, and completeness of his own soul creation, and that man reflects that satisfaction and joy, and that you are that man. You will be grateful that God, infinite good, is free from all fault-finding, criticism, jealousy, or hate, and that man reflects this freedom, and that you are that man. Loving ourselves within the radius of the searchlight of truth, we will be good neighbors because we know how to bless. The searchlight will not leave out our neighbor, but will show his beauty and goodness to be equal to, but not greater than ours. Loving him as we correctly love ourselves, we will see him safe in God's love. We cannot love his injustice, his dishonesty, or his willfulness. And we do not have to, because we now see they are no part of his true being, and are only indications of how he seems to be still mesmerized by a false sense of himself. Subheading: Keeping Your Neighbor Safe. A student of Christian Science was suffering from a condition of poisoning, with uncomfortable manifestations on the skin. As she was walking the floor in great distress, a co-worker, not a student of Christian Science, came to her saying that she hoped that her jealousy and anger of the past several days had not caused the student to suffer. The scientist lovingly explained that the thoughts of another have no power to harm unless accepted as harmful. She assured her friend that she held nothing but love for her, and that in no way was she blaming her for her suffering. Great relief was expressed on the face of the co-worker, and when she understood that she was not being blamed, and the student was so grateful to see that relief, that her own healing was instantaneous. Through that experience, the student learned to watch her own thinking, to see that her thoughts were loving enough to include her neighbor. She reasoned that although man's true safety is in God's love, there was something she could do for her neighbor by seeing him safe in that love. And so her challenge through the years has been, am I seeing my brother safe in God's love? Let us each answer to ourselves right now, am I seeing my brother safe in God's love? There is only one way to love, and that is to do it, to make the spiritually mental effort required. Our unselfish spiritual desire to bless another is the reflection of God's love. It is a hint of God's infinite, tender consideration for everything that lives. We should claim our reflected capacity to love others as God loves us. Man knows little about true spiritual love, but we can at least begin to refuse to indulge anything that is its opposite. We should constantly yearn to take the sting out of our own and out of our brother's unlovingness by knowing its unreality and powerlessness. Any act that is not loving is a waste of time and slowing up much of our heavenward march. There is nothing important about man, nothing is of real interest about him, except his perfection as the Son of God. Nothing is important about our lives, about our affairs, about our relationships with others, except the spiritual truth about them. Thinking of ourselves and others as persons revolving in a material round is deadening to our own and our brother's progress. But identifying ourselves and others with the Christ truth brings healing and aids steps heavenward. Here is part of a helpful poem. In the words of the young man whom Jesus met, she too asked, Lord, what lack I yet? What is my need, all else above? The answer came, to love, and that was by Maxine Pelly. We need to love our neighbour in order to gain our own full salvation. Failing to see our neighbour as God's perfect reflection, we deny our own perfect sonship with God. We consent that evil has presence and power, accept evil's view for God's view, and darken our own thought. We can always begin by loving our neighbour's welfare. We can daily think toward everyone we meet, "Can I help you?" Rejoicing in our own completeness, we will not be stingy or greedy, thinking that another's loss is our gain. We will not burden another's steps because we are not ready to be strong. Subheading, Overcoming Weakness. Robert Louis Stevenson, the author, said, "You cannot run away from a weakness. You must sometimes fight it out or perish. And if that be so, why not now and where you stand?" That is taken from the book The Amateur Immigrant. The study of Christian Science, my friends, will not relieve you of the need of overcoming evil. It will show up more clearly than ever before your own errors, as well as those of your neighbour. But with Christian Science, you can now fight these errors skillfully and without fear. You can be courageous because you know that all evil is illusion, which is devoid of any power except that which you mistakenly give it. Your spiritual weapons completely outbalance evil's boasted strength. Childlike willingness to obey the Christ truth as it unfolds will make your struggle light and assure success. Here are the lines of the hymn 158. "O rest beside the weary road, and hear the angels sing. The time of our resting is dependent upon the time of our listening. If we are listening obediently, the Christ, as revealed in Christian Science, will show up the errors which are doing the most to hinder our progress, and we will welcome the opportunity to overcome them, even if this overcoming involves a struggle. But the spiritual overcoming is glorious because it is the way heavenward. The winning reward is priceless, the joy gained unspeakable." Subheading, Compassionate Interest for Youth. The young people of today are faced with a great challenge. They especially need our loving interest. Jesus was a great neighbor to the young. He was himself young, and youthful John leaned on his bosom. The faithful young student of Christian Science today, though in military service, will expect miracles. He will accept his opportunity to love friend or foe, knowing that love is the liberator. He will expect that his understanding and reflection of God's infinite and all-powerful love will protect him from cruelty or undue hardship. He will expect all-powerful love to be superior to evil's hate. He will expect to prove life and protection here, and confident in his knowledge that his true substance is spiritual, and that it can never be harmed, disfigured, nor destroyed, he will overcome his fear of death. He will take comfort in the assurance that those who have gone through the experience of death have grown in spiritual understanding and power because of their faithful fight, and that a higher sense of life and harmony is abundantly blessing them now. And if ever faced by cruel torture at the hands of evil tormentors, he can take comfort in the remembrance of the power of the Christ understanding, and the love that Jesus proved when he rescued Mary, taken in adultery from the angry mob of scribes and Pharisees poised to stone her to death. Do you recall the story of Jesus' great challenge, his great counterattack when they tempted him, saying, as recorded in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John, "Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned. What sayest thou?" Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted himself up and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. Again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. That's from John chapter 8. As he wrote on the ground, might not Jesus have discerned the sins of her accusers and have written them away in the sands? Might not his great compassion during those tense moments, as he saw this woman's true nature, which enabled him to say to her, Neither do I condemn thee, go and sin no more. Might not that compassion have discerned the true nature of her accusers, and healed those of receptive heart of their sins, now self-seen? We know with what effect his compassion touched her. This defense was one of Jesus' greatest acts as an exemplary good neighbor. He was being obedient to the two great commandments, and his obedience brought safety to himself as well as to the woman. The young man and woman of today will take comfort that the faithful prayers of their loved ones, uniting with their own prayers, can hold them safe and secure, and bring evidence after evidence of God's loving care for them and for their neighbor. They will take comfort in the many proofs of the power of spiritual prayer made by young Christians in the past. Sufficient understanding of God's all power and of man's perfect spiritual being can hold one safe in the presence of an exploding shell, yea, even of an atom bomb, for eternal spirit cannot be touched by matter, and God's idea can never be harmed or destroyed. Mankind is as safe as it spiritually understands itself to be. Subheading, Love the Liberator. Love is the liberator, as we read on page 225 of Science and Health. Oh, if all Christians today would unite in fervent daily prayer, filled with warmest love for friend and foe. Our faithful leader pled with us to pray each morning, Thy kingdom come, and may thy word enrich the infections of all mankind and govern them. It's on page 41 of our manual. It is not so much that we do not know how to pray, but that our love of our neighbor is not sufficient to defeat the evil mesmerism that keeps us from helping him. If faithfully praying in accordance with our highest understanding, shall we not expect to see evidences of the eventual dawn of peace? Spiritual understanding and obedient living of the two great commandments, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and to love thy neighbor as thyself, are mankind's best and only final security, the only way to permanent peace and eventual full salvation. In an earlier Christian Science Sentinel, we find the following introduction and poem. Little children love one another, said three times in a voice of unutterable tenderness and meaning, is by some supposed to have been the last public speech of John as Bishop of Ephesus. The following is a poem taken from the Christian Science Sentinel, page 419, volume 2. Into the hearts of the listening throng passeth the peace from above, for John the Beloved is talking, telling his children of love. Little children, love one another. This is the message he brings, for John is ambassador loyal of his Lord, the King of Kings. Little children, love one another. Again he says, low and sweet. Would you know where he caught that accent? John sat at the master's feet. Little children love one another. He has said these words 3 times, and their echo round the earth is ringing, one of the sweetest of chimes. So often this message I'm hearing, I seem to be of that throng, and oh, may I learn to repeat it, in practice, John's tender song. End of lecture.